You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
I'm listening to the Canned Air Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Canned Air, your tribute to comics and pop culture. I am Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
And joining us today are two gentlemen from a band that came to my attention when we were promoting for the episode where we had Gates McFadden on, Dr. Beverly Crusher from Star Trek The Next Generation. And these gentlemen reached out to me because I tagged them in that post, and I'm so glad they did because they have a band called the Beverly Crushers. It's a Star Trek themed band. That music is fucking fantastic.
Amazing, yeah.
I can't get enough of it. We welcome today from the band Rob Cassis and Tom Monahan. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being here.
Yes, thank you so much for having us.
Very excited about this episode because, you know, Jack, I know you've heard me say years ago, you know, we've been doing this 7 years, that before Canned Air, you know, became like a concept, I originally wanted to do like a music podcast. And this is exactly why I wanted to do, sit down with, you know, members of a band, talk about the band and talk about the music. So it's very fulfilling here, almost 400 episodes in, to get to, you know, stretch my wings in that way. So very excited to do that. But before we do any of that, don't forget to find us on Twitter at Canned Air Pod and on Instagram at Canned _ Air. And if you like what we're doing, head to patreon.com/CannedAirPod or just find us on the website, CannedAirPodcast.com. A lot of URLs I'm throwing around there. And you can find a way to back us. If you don't want to become a monthly subscriber, you can buy merch that supports us too. And puts a shirt on. You can become our walking billboard at your expense.
Yeah,
I mean,
yours.
That's a hell of a commercial if you ask me. But what else we got, Jack?
Tuesday nights, most Tuesdays around 9 p.m. Eastern. Stop over at our Facebook page and play some Jackbox games. Meet another podcast and play along with us. Good time. You might win a prize.
You might win a prize.
You might
indeed.
Win that shirt.
Yeah, that makes you a walking billboard.
Yep.
You're fucking welcome. You're welcome.
Paid advertising.
All right. Well, with that behind us, let's just turn our attention over here to Rob and Tom. So very excited to talk to you guys again. Ever since that episode I referenced earlier, you know, you guys have been on the radar and listening to you. We had you guys playing at a bonfire at my friend's house about a month or two ago because it was just, it's so fun. Everyone there was into, you know, Trek. And, you know, what's great about the band is even if you're not into Star Trek, you can still fully enjoy it. I'd say probably between the four of us here, I probably have the least Star Trek knowledge. I like Star Trek, but I wouldn't consider myself a Trekkie. And I still love every song, though I don't get the reference all the time, if you know what I mean. So bravo to you gentlemen. Love your music. But before we get too much into that, I'd like to talk about, you know, to you guys just about, you know, yourselves, who you are, how you guys met, how you came together. Robert, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, sure. So Tom and I met back in high school, actually. We both grew up in Wilmington, Delaware. And so we've been friends for a very long time. When I met Tom, he was already playing bass in a band, and I had just started playing guitar basically at that time. And you know, became fast friends. Actually, one of the things we bonded over real early was Simpsons trivia. We were both obsessed with the Simpsons back then. So we hit it off right away. And then basically over the last 20 years-ish, we've been playing music together. We've been writing songs. We've been in a few different bands. We eventually left Wilmington and moved out to San Francisco a couple years apart from each other and, you know, kind of reformed, reconnected, and started playing music out here. So the genesis of our relationship was really always kind of music. You know, we've always been huge music fans, music appreciators, and we met as musicians as well.
Sure. Tom, do you have anything to add to that before I go farther?
Yeah, I would say that we became friends basically because Rob approached me and sort of was like, hey, like, you think you know your shit about The Simpsons? Well, what about this? Well, what about this? And we started kind of going back and forth with, like, you know, the minutia of all those sort of golden era Simpsons episodes. And he sort of recruited me to be on the academic bowl team because, you know, we were super cool in high school, clearly being on the academic bowl team. But we ended up becoming really good friends. And, you know, at the time, I've been playing music for a little bit. I think like most people, I started playing music when I was around 14 because I was like, this will be a way that I could stand out and get girls. And then about 2 years later, I was like, this isn't working, but it's still pretty fun. Right. And so I kind of kept it up for a while. You know, I had been playing with a couple of friends for I was in a band with like a bunch of my childhood friends from the time I was 14 until I was about like 22 when we would play, you know, 5 hours a night, 5 days a week. You know, that's all that we did basically. Then when we moved out to San Francisco, I think that Rob kind of glazed over one of the things that was like that thing that sort of solidified our sort of musical collaboration. We started a band with some friends from the East Coast that had all moved out to San Francisco. So we're in a band called The Chop. And it was a bunch of guys from Delaware, and I actually played drums in that band, even though I wasn't a drummer. And we had a friend of ours who played bass in the band, even though he wasn't a bass player, and a friend who played keys, even though he really wasn't a keys player. But just through sort of, you know, having a ton of fun and that kind of like grit and sort of determination, we ended up, you know, being able to play a bunch of shows and like play at some of the nicer venues in San Francisco and play all up and down the coast and out to, you know, like Reno and Salt Lake City and places like that. And it was a ton of fun, but it was really just all about, you know, us doing kind of what we wanted to do and not necessarily worrying about, you know, we're not trying to make the next, you know, hit single or something like that. It was really like, let's just focus on the things that make us happy. We always just joke that we were millionaires in fun and like negative 10,000 in earnings for that band. I think that sort of mentality that we had there kind of solidified what eventually led to the Beverly Crushers, which is like, make music for yourself that's going to make you happy. And that's probably what's going to get people to pay attention to you and probably get people to like you.
Absolutely. I mean, in all the years we've been doing this show, we've heard time and time and time again that the best projects come from, you know, when you're writing it from a place of fun for yourself and not trying to fill expectations. That's when you get your best product, right? So, and that shows through on your guys' albums too. So, bravo to you guys on that. So you mentioned your Simpsons fandom that brought you together, and I applaud you. I've got probably a good section of my basement is nothing but Simpsons toys. Before he got here, I had to change out of my Simpsons pajama pants, and I'm actually wearing a Bartman t-shirt. Like, I'm just nice. Huge fan. Nice. So
you don't need a light in the basement because there's so much yellow already. It's
right. It just lights itself up. But so where does Star Trek then come into your guys' fandom?
Well, you know, we grew up in we're 90s kids. So that same golden era of The Simpsons. I was watching Star Trek The Next Generation originally with my parents and enjoying it. And we've always had a fondness for the show. And it's something that, like, we've kind of always just referenced back through our adult lives and joked about the minutia again of what's going on the Enterprise and what it's actually like to live on the Enterprise and what do they really use those holodecks for and, you know, stuff like that. And so it was just a sort of running inside jokes about Trek. But of course we really do love the show. I haven't seen every Star Trek episode ever made, I have to say, but Next Gen was kind of our series. And I think the worldview on display there is just really speaks to us, you know?
Yeah, I can understand that. I just, what was it that was like, okay, like, it's moved us to this point, like, we need to theme a band around this. Like, I'm just curious how that intertwined, you know?
Well, you know, honestly, we had been in bands or playing shows for a while. And then, you know, you get older and life kind of gets in the way and you're not like closing down a bar on a Tuesday to, you know, for making $60 or something like that. So, but I kind of look at it, you know, some guys are really into golf and they'll get together with their friends and go to, you know, Scottsdale and go play golf or something like that for like a fun weekend. And we had worked really hard on getting this competency up and playing music and also recording music. And so that's kind of our sort of like get together time where we'll plan it out for a long time. There's a place that we go up in Grass Valley, just kind of, you know, north of Sacramento in the foothills of the Sierras. It's beautiful out there. We know a guy who's got a studio and a couple acres of land. And, you know, you stay at the house and just kind of get immersed in that sort of world of playing music for, you know, 4 or 5 days. And that's kind of like a vacation for us. And so we were really looking for projects that we could find an excuse to be able to say, like, you know, to our wives, like, hey, I need like 4 or 5 days. Just go hang out with friends up in the mountains. And, you know, we're not going skiing or something like that, but we're, you know, going up and recording an album. And it's, you know, it's one of the great joys of my life is like putting together music, but also we're like very referentially based people. Most of our humor is reference-based humor. And so we'd be kind of making jokes about it. And then, you know, Rob wrote a song, which actually didn't end up making it onto this album, but we put out an EP and it was on that, called Make It So, from the standpoint of Wesley Crusher. And then I sort of was like, okay, I'm going to take up the challenge and try to write a song, because in our previous bands, Rob had done most of the songwriting. I'm sort of relatively new to actually writing songs. And so I ended up writing that song, School and Pen Forward, as like a, hey, I think that this captures what we always really liked about being in a band, which is that, like, you know, we picture ourselves, like, we had this big rickety 16-passenger van, and we'd rip into some town and kind of feel like pirates going out and, you know, drinking and singing songs in bars and stuff like that. And it's like, I bet you that the guys in the Enterprise probably feel a little bit like that. You know, they're kind of ripping through the galaxy, but they have this really tight-knit camaraderie, and, you know, you have your leader that you're all following fearlessly, and, you know, when you're done, you sit down, you have a pint, you talk about what you did for the day, and it all came together pretty easily. Some other musical projects are a bit more of a slog to get off the ground, but this one kind of came together pretty quick, and basically said, well, if the first two were this easy, I bet you the next 10 will be just as easy, so might as well go all in.
Glad you guys did. It's a great album.
Thank you.
And I recommend people check it out. Sick Bay, it's called. And also the EP Engage, which has Make It So on there, mm-hmm. which is very much like a West Coast, like kind of like surf rock from the 50s, I would kind of equate it to, which is my cup of tea. I love that era. Absolutely adore it. So what kind of music then did you guys grow up listening to? What inspires you guys?
So we have very varied backgrounds, and you can tell if you listen to the record that we do like a lot of different genres. We don't like to be beholden. And in fact, a lot of the bands we like kind of switch up a lot and make a lot of changes. You know, we like all the classics, the Beatles and Pink Floyd.
Evident. And very evident.
Yeah. And Bowie and Steely Dan and Talking Heads, you can hear all those influences, I'm sure, in the songs. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the truth is we were just great music appreciators. And Tom brings, I'm sure he can mention some of his influences in there, too. But we've just been sitting around at bars talking about music and listening to music and talking about track lists and alternate track lists for our entire lives. So the list really goes on. But drawing a lot of inspiration, particularly from people who I think are more on the experimental side, whether it's like Bowie with how he arranges things, or even the Beatles with relatively experimental how they were, or even modern bands like, say, Ween, or, you know, They Might Be Giants was a big band for me when I was younger, for instance.
Yes.
So some of the weirdness thrown in too.
Yeah, definitely. My parents listened to just absolute dog shit music. It was terrible. It was like, you know, like Irish traditional music and like really shitty off-Broadway musicals, stuff like that. So I one of my very good friends growing up, actually one of the guys that I was in a band with for a very long time, his dad was a lounge singer, and he would drive up to Atlantic City and play piano in like piano bars up there. And so he was really into music. And I remember him sitting me and my friend Adam down at one point, putting on Frank Zappa's Apostrophe, and just being like, you have to listen to this. You're like the perfect age. You're going to like Yellow Snow, but like everything else, you're really going to dig it. And like that kind of stuff sort of just blew my mind. And it's like opened up this sort of, world where music didn't have to be super serious and about love and heartache and all these really like deep things. It just was fun and enjoyable and something that you could pop on and have a, you know, a really great time listening to it. It's also deep and good music, but you don't have to have every single thing be about some girl that broke your heart or something like that.
And thank God.
And
Jesus.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And like Rob mentioned, you know, he actually got me into They Might Be Giants. So they're one of those bands that I just love the playfulness of it. I love how, you know, you can pop on a They Might Be Giants song and it's about fucking James K. Polk. And you're like, yeah, it's a great song. It's really well written. And, you know, it's actually quite informative. And you don't have to, you know, feel like you want to slit your wrists when you're done with it.
Tom, I think it's funny that you mentioned your parents' bad musical taste, but and yet Irish folk music and Irish drinking songs have been a part of a lot of our. We did inherit some of that, whether you like it or not. You know, there's a drama to it, and there's a drinking song aspect to it. You know,
that's what makes it great.
The drinking songs didn't speak to 10-year-old me, I guess.
See, that's what makes you know, listening to Sick Bay like so much fun, because it doesn't settle itself within a genre. It goes from, you know, like the song Holodeck 4, which kind of has like a 70s porn meets like Barry White kind of a thing going. And then there's like, you know, the jazz song, you know, These Crewmates of Mine. Like that was so cool. And then, you know, Four Lights, there's like a whole Floyd thing happening there, kind of meets Smashing Pumpkins. Like it just, it's all in and over the place. And that's what's so great about it. You know, no matter what kind of mood you're in. You know, I think of the Smashing Pumpkins, like Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness kind of had that same kind of a formula where, you know, you had slow songs, you had, you know, kind of corny songs, and you'd have like balls to the wall, like metal songs. Like it was just all over the place. So no matter what mood you're in, there's something there for you. And that's what I think the making of a great album.
I think my,
you know, I had
going through each song. Just hearing the different music style, and I was like, oh,
yeah,
because this is
anything's
like this.
Up for grabs. Yeah, like anything could happen at this point. Yeah,
I didn't know I was in the mood for this type of music right now,
but I am.
It's funny you mentioned that Smashing Pumpkins was like my touchstone band in the 90s. I had the gigantic wall size poster of Siamese Dream, and you know, I went to see them a bunch, I think when I was like 16, and I just got like my driver's license, and I was like, the first thing I did, I drove up to Philadelphia and saw them at the Spectrum play a show.
Oh, tight. Awesome.
Soup. Yeah. Yeah. It was really great.
That would be cool. I've seen, I'm a huge Pumpkins fan myself, and right. I didn't get to see them in their original run, but I've seen Billy several times, and the best I got to see them on the reunion, and I use air quotes, kind of reunion tour they did here within the past like 3 to 4 years. And that was the first time it seemed like Billy Corgan really kind of pulled his head out of his ass and accommodated to the fans instead of just playing for himself every time he got on stage, you know?
Yeah.
But to divert myself from going on a rant, that's just going to piss me off.
I mean, you do talk about those influences, though. Yeah, like, again, 90s. I think 90s was a time when we were in high school, and there was a real throwback to the 70s happening there. So we kind of grew up half on our parents' classic rock and half on that 90s, which was sort of a revival of that, whether it was Smashing Pumpkins or Weezer or Pearl Jam or, you know, various other things that were happening.
Agreed.
Yeah, I joke that I was in a dad band in high school, because basically the band that I was in, like the first song that we played for like our high school talent show, we did Sunshine of Your Love, and we would do like, you know, Guess Who songs and like Hendrix songs. Basically all of it was just like 70s rock at like, you know, county fair type of stuff that we were playing. And I look back, I'm like, oh, I was totally in a dad band when I was like 15 years old.
Me and my friends were the exact same way. We used to just play Tom Petty like when we were like in junior high. And like at the time, you know, Tom Petty now, it's like, everybody knows and loves Tom Petty, but at the time, you know, like, you're listening to Tom Petty, why aren't you listening to Matchbox 20 or Bare Naked Ladies, asshole? Like, but that's how the times changed, isn't it? You know, why are you listening to the Fossil stuff? Like, listen to something more contemporary, like Chumbawamba.
Good music back then when it meant something.
Yeah, exactly, right? We knew good shit when we saw it. That's what it was. So, you know, having a band themed around Star Trek, how long has this band been established? How long have you guys been playing?
We actually started back in 2015. That's when we wrote the first songs.
Okay.
I want to say it was 2015, right, Tom? So it was a little bit of a long gestating project. Put the EP out in 2015. and kind of let it lie for a while. I had actually moved away for a little bit and, you know, just various life things, but we always kind of kept talking about it. We knew we liked it. We loved like the group we were with. And like Tom said, kind of how easy it was to write about, and it still just made us laugh. So we sort of ended up, when I came back to San Francisco, ended up, we revisited it.
Yeah. And I had a couple of kids, which, you know, does not help with getting out of the house and playing music a lot. Yeah. But we finally got that sort of regular practice schedule back, because once it's on the calendar, you don't have to argue about it every week. It's just like, oh, it's Thursday night, it's the night I go play. But you have that one big argument about getting Thursday night on the calendar, and then once that's there, you're just golden for the next couple of years. And that really was what kind of drove us to be able to make a full album. That was always kind of our goal. I love having physical media, and sure, it's something that, you know, I want 25 years from now to be able to just pop on a record and be like, that's me. Yeah, look, your dad wasn't a total loser all the time. He's kind of cool sometimes, you know?
Yeah. But he was singing about Star Trek. I'm
still... Yeah, okay, fair enough. Come on.
Not a loser here, you know, at Candair, though.
As Tom kind of mentioned, though, we've been writing other kinds of songs throughout those years too, and we've even done some other recordings, and we like the process of, sure, writing songs that kind of that pique our interest, and then going into the studio and recording them. And so we've had some of these other writing prompts, even they haven't gotten quite as they haven't flourished quite as much as the Beverly Crushers, but, you know, we got some other recordings out there, some other pop culture that we decided to write about, let's say.
I would almost guarantee there's some Simpson songs floating out there somewhere, no?
Sadly, not yet. Sadly,
not yet. Yeah. I think that's one of those ones where you don't tackle that beast until you're ready to go all in on it. You know, you have to really commit to that.
Well, not to sound like a generic asshole who's trying to throw a pun out, but make it so. Please.
I think one of the challenges there is that The Simpsons had so many songs in it. And that's one of the reasons I think we were drawn to it, too. It's so musical at its core. Like, they wrote great songs and put them in the show.
They absolutely did. The one song that comes to mind, I don't know if you guys are fans of the Bloodhound Gang or not, but on their album Hefty Fine, they did a song called Ralph Wiggum that was just nothing but Ralph Wiggum quotes from the show, just rearranged to rhyme and go with the melody. It was fantastic. You should check it out if you've never heard it. It's great.
It's got to be some work.
That is pretty genius.
I can't imagine. I would never take on that task. Jeez. So hats off to the Bloodhound Gang, I suppose.
Yeah, actually, our goal is really just to just keep writing what I think a lot of people would consider weird music. And that's really, you know, that's what gets me going. You know, like Rob alluded to, we recorded but didn't release a bunch of songs about Ghostbusters. For like a friend's bachelor party, we went and just recorded a bunch of like weird songs about like pizza parties and shit like that for, you know, just for a weekend for fun. I'm currently working on a metal project where it's a bunch of songs about Arby's. I'm a big fan of Arby's.
Tom is understating his love for Arby's here. Tom is obsessed with Arby's.
I get his love for Arby's. It's fucking fantastic. Mm-hmm. You mix some of that horsey sauce with that Arby's sauce. Yeah. Oh, my God, you're in heaven. Especially with those curly.
Oh, hell yes.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I might have to go get some Arby's now.
That's
thanks.
Exactly what I'm thinking, too.
Yeah. The bummer is that there's no Arby's within like a 30-minute drive of me, so I have to like make a special trip to go out and get some Arby's.
I hate to rub it in your face, Tom, but I got one a block away.
Oh, fuck you.
I'll think of you as I'm chewing on roast beef later. But I keyed. So let's talk about some of the other members of this band and like, what are you guys' exact roles in the band? Like, I know you said that Tom was playing bass and Rob, you play guitar. Like, are either of you guys the singers or another person for that?
Yeah, we sort of divide singing duties. So usually we both are writing songs and have been the lead singer on some of the songs. So it's kind of divided up throughout the album.
Okay.
And then both do sing a lot of the backup. So, and yeah, traditionally, if you write the song, you end up as the lead singer on the song.
Got it.
So I think either Tom or I are the lead singer on all but one of the tunes on Sick Bay.
Very Beatles approach there. Mm. I love that.
And we have a guy who plays keyboards and trombone for us, Scott Okamoto, who is he is by far the best musician in the band. he is a really good piano player, really good trombone player, and he's also a gigantic Star Trek fan, much more so than even the two of us are. And so when we found a guy who played trombone who wanted to be in a Star Trek band, we're like, well, I mean, come on.
You have to be salivating down the front of yourself. Like, you'd be stupid to say no.
Well, he picked up, the story goes that he picked up trombone because of Riker.
I was just going to ask you that. Yeah, if Jonathan Frakes was his inspiration.
Seriously.
Yeah, because awesome. I think he's been playing piano since he was a little kid. But then when he's about our age, too, when Next Gen came on, he saw the trombone. He's like, oh, that's what I want to do. And then, so we kind of knew, we knew him, you know, mutual friends, and when we were putting this project together, we were like, clearly, this guy needs to be in this band, and he accepted immediately.
That's incredible. That's incredible. I was going to ask you guys about the brass I was hearing on the album, if it was either synthesized or actually real, and that's amazing to hear. I love that. I love that. So who else is in the band? How many total members are there?
So it's basically four guys, myself and Tom. Scott, who, like I said, covers keyboards and the horns. Mm-hmm. I think he played trumpet on at least one of the tracks as well. And then a drummer whose name is Joe. And that's kind of the core. We did do a recording session with another guitar player some years back, who's a friend of ours, who's on a couple of the tracks, and his voice is on a couple of the tracks. But yeah, I'd say the core is four of us.
I'd love to have the whole band on, but then you just get like a group full of people talking over each other, and it just doesn't work all the time, does it?
But we wouldn't get a word in. They'd just be sitting there bullshitting with each other.
Well, it'd make our job easy, shit. But all right, so I want to talk to you guys then about some of the songs that, I guess the standout songs off the albums. The first, I guess I've mentioned all these songs. They've been mentioned in our conversation thus far, but just spending a little more time with them, and I guess why you chose the approach to it. First, with Make It So off the Engage EP. Again, you know, the very like 1950s, 60s West Coast surf rock kind of a sound. I'd say kind of what comparable to like Beach Boys. I really thought of like The Wonders from that Tom Hanks movie. The thing you do is like really what it was harking on, which is Bravo, one of my favorite films. But what was it that made you want to mix that sound? Like, how did that song come together?
Yeah, I'll jump in on that. Well, I think working with Tom all these years, the thing we absolutely know is going to be on every song is vocal harmony. We really like to harmonize, and that's what we like in our music, whether it's the Beatles or the Beach Boys or, you know, any of the above. So I don't know if we really take a super directed approach to what the end product of the song is going to turn out as, but we love pop music. I think that's clear. And we knew, you know, we want to harmonize and we love that. So I think, I think there's a weird revisionist history around, say, like the early Beatles era of pop music, if you will, which I think the That Thing You Do is kind of harkening back to.
Sure.
I think that stuff is great. I think you're not going to find a better pop song than Can't Buy Me Love. They pack a lot into a few minutes. So the idea of creating a little bit of a relatively tight song, I don't know, I think it's a 3-minute song or maybe less than 3 minutes, that has a few different parts to it and that has, you know, that kind of repeatable catchiness. That's, you know, that's sort of just the genesis of the song, is to try to make it catchy. I don't think either of us want to be like overly avant-garde, despite our high concept album that we're talking about right now. So. Tom, what do you remember from those sessions?
You know, I remember working with Rob for a long time. The songs that he writes come kind of in like just a very stripped down guitar and melody form, and like they could go in a lot of different directions. Like, you could have turned that kind of into a punk song if you wanted to. You could have done something a little bit more doo-wop style, but it just happened to work out that we had this kind of like melody to go over top of the guitar, and I think that kind of helped define a lot of the way that the feel was going to go. And we wanted to work in the most iconic line from the show, in our opinion, "Make It So," which I think is like, you know, we talk a lot about the sort of leadership style in Star Trek and like how fantastic Picard's leadership style is just generally. And that concept of like, I've always loved Make It So, because it's basically saying like, I trust you to make this thing happen, and I'm going to sort of put it into your hands, and I'm going to, you know, we're going to walk away. You're going to go ahead and make it so. You're going to go ahead and do it. And so, you know, I think the overall concept of using that hook was really great, but then trying to get that relationship angle in there of the sort of longing for a father figure of Wesley in there, I think was, you know, when it really kind of went to the next level from just like, oh, we got this cool hook of Make It So, to like, okay, how can we actually wrap that into something that is elevates it a little bit more and makes it not just like, oh, I'm just abusing this line because it's something you already know, but turn it into a, you know, like you
some
said,
depth,
put another layer on top of it. Yeah. Yeah.
I love that. That's amazing. Now, another one that you guys have touched on already, I think I mentioned myself as well, was the Irish / Romulan drinking song, A Stool in Tin Forward. So, I mean, I guess through some of your explanations, we've heard how this has come through. Tom, you said in your background, what was it, your folks listen to a lot of Irish music. Is that pretty much the sole explanation to this song, or is there any more?
You know, in all honesty, I never had even considered that early period of music exposure, which I tried to block out for most of my life, had that much of an influence on it. I wanted like a sea shanty, basically. Like, I picture them as basically the modern, you know, the modern sailors. And so I wanted some kind of sea shanty. And I've always liked the character of O'Brien. He's got that really kind of isolated job. He just like, they just walk into the transporter room, he's just standing there. I'm like, how fucking long have you been standing there? You just like sitting at that console for like the last 7 hours doing nothing? Like, and then, you know, he does 30 seconds worth of shit, and then he's, you know, he's back to being alone. At the end of that, he's gotta be pretty fucking depressed. He doesn't have a great relationship with his wife. He's definitely going to the bar. And then you're like, oh, 10 forward is just a fucking bar that all these people on this ship are going to sort of, you know, forget about their troubles. But yeah. Then also, you know, as they sort of go through the song, they're getting a little bit more soft, and then they're all linking arms and singing about how they got their captain's back and everything. Well, I got me a lady, she's Bonnie and me. Now she's sending her flat, so she's bawling at me. You know where to find me when she starts to wail. On a stool in Ten Forward with a Romulan ale. It's a great song, and it still makes me laugh. But Tom wrote this line about away. He aways lots of teams. That just, for some reason, that really gets me even now. But to Tom's point, I think we did go through a period in an earlier band where we got into this like sing along. It's partly coming from this idea of traveling with a band in a van and having an acoustic guitar getting passed around, and people are trying to, yeah, you're trying to stave off boredom and or whatever, and trying to get people to sing along. And there was a point where we were doing, with an earlier band, we were doing a Clancy Brothers song, like All For Me Grog, which is just about drinking, or I think the Wild Rover we did one time, at least, Tom. And then, so like, we do have a little bit of a history with this kind of sing-along kind of thing. Oh, we wrote a tribute song to our hometown too, that kind of has a little bit of that vibe. But basically, when you write a song in 3/4 and you know, you join arms and clink beer glasses while you're singing it, you know, you get that vibe. I hope it comes through on the recording that when we did the group vocal, we were all completely shit-faced at the time. You can hear people messing up the lyrics and shit in the background. It was one of the last things we did at like 1 o'clock in the morning of that recording session. And so, you know, we wanted to be authentic.
Like I say, it gives it that authentic feel to it.
Yeah. Right. And you can hear that. And exactly, like you both have already said, that's how it doesn't sound fake. It sounds like you're drinking with the mates, you know, when you're hearing it. And yeah, I was drinking beer with my friend while we had that playing at that party. I was talking to you about you guys earlier. But
have you guys seen the show The Lower Decks?
Oh, yeah, totally.
That
yeah.
I can totally see, because, what, like 50% of that show, they're in the bar pretty much doing, I could totally see them throwing that song into that show.
I've never seen it. I don't even know what it is.
It takes place on the lower decks of the ship. It's pretty much everything that happens that's not on the bridge.
It's like a bunch of red shirts down there. Kind
exactly,
of stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they're, most of the time, they're on the bar just relaxing or talking or.
I see.
But yeah, that's all, pretty much that's all it made me think of that whole time.
That does sound cool. Where is that? Well, just online or?
It's on CBS All Access. So you got to have the
Oh, really?
Free trial at least to be able to watch it all.
Drats. That's not going to happen. All right. Anyway, but, okay. Moving on to Holodeck 4. How did this song come to be?
It's the best line from the entire series. You know, so the Famke Janssen comes on as the perfect mate, gets Riker all spun up that she's meant for somebody else, but she like imprints on whoever she's with, and she tries to become like a perfect woman for him, and he's getting all hot and bothered, and he leaves her room, and he hits his communicator. It's like, if anybody needs me, I'll be in Holodeck 4. And you know exactly what he's going to Holodeck 4 to do, right? He's not going there to listen to fucking classical music. So it seemed like, and then, Riker is the sort of sex bomb who's always been kind of the underlying theme of that, of his sort of character arc. Like, he's just a ladies man. Mm-hmm. And so we figured it was, if you're going to write a song that sounds like it's out of 70s porn, you might as well put it to Riker talking about how, we're a little spun up. I'm going to be in Holodeck 4. If you want to come and join me, I think you know what's going on there. You know? I'll be in Holodeck 4.
I feel like that was like an inside joke for our friends for a very long time that we would bandy about, that was the one time that we could find in Next Generation where they really acknowledge what the holodeck would really be used for.
Well, it's a damn catchy song. Yeah, I can't tell you how many times I've listened to that one. Does that make me sleazy at all? Just because that's one of my faves?
Absolutely.
Does it? Okay, cool. I'm a sleaze hound. All right. These crewmates of mind, another, completely just different genre, I guess, from everything else. Very jazzy, upbeat. Makes me think of like Richard Cheese kind of music. How did this come to be?
I'll let Tom jump in here. He wrote this song.
Yeah, I was going through a period of going to a lot of estate sales and buying old records from people. Somebody dies and they got a bunch of old like Johnny Mathis records and stuff like that, right. Buy them for a buck a piece. And so I ended up listening to a whole lot of that stuff. And frankly, I wanted to buy an upright bass and I needed a good excuse to buy an upright bass. And I said, hey, if I write a song that would need an upright bass to on the recording, I could maybe pitch this to my wife as a good reason for me to buy
an
upright.
You are clever. It's a second great idea you've had now. Getting up.
I'm just hoping my wife doesn't listen to this podcast. No. Go cry to your mom.
I'm sending you home with my knife in your back. Cause you threw me some fire. We'll rip you apart.
I always liked that, that episode a lot. And wanted to do something from the standpoint of the Norsekins, just that whole, it basically started from the, no Gromba human line. And it's you'd be able to work that in somewhere. And then this concept of I had written a lot more where it was going to be a Sharks versus Jets things where you had two different singers for the Starfleet guys and for the Norsekins and everything like that. But ended up paring it down to just sort of the Norsekin point of view. And I wanted it to sort of play against type for them, right? Because they're these you write a metal song about those guys or something that's a little bit more hardcore. But, you write something that's a little kind of easygoing about them and that, you kind of don't even realize who you're talking about until you get a little farther on in the song. You're like, oh, shit, okay. Yeah. You're actually talking about these gigantic, monstrous beings that are going to stab you in the back.
This is great. I love this album. I can't recommend people enough to listen to it. One more song I need to touch on, unless, Jack, you have any other songs you want to mention or anything you want to add quick.
When the Walls Fell. That was the first song I ever heard from you guys, and that's the iconic episode of Star Trek, and then it just kind of, you guys, it sold me on that one. And there's every time my wife will watch like the whole run of the series every once in a while, and I get caught on that episode every time. And I don't know. It's something
I need to educate myself.
You got to see that one. It makes like a lot of no sense, I guess. I don't know. It's a bunch of gibberish, but I don't know. It's a pretty strong episode.
And it's what's the name of it again?
When the Walls Fell.
When the Walls Fell. Yeah. Okay.
Like, if you listen to the lyrics, you won't know what the hell's going on. Unless you saw the episode, then you know what's going on.
Well, see, that's just, goes back to my point at the very top of this, is like, you don't have to be a Trekkie to enjoy this. So I've heard the song without having a fucking clue as to what they're talking about. But at the same time, like, damn, this is a good song.
It's great with that episode, too. You can really see who Star Trek fans are, because if you say Tanaka When the Walls Fell, then if they reply with something,
separates the boys from the men, doesn't it?
You're like, yes, I know you. I know who you are.
Yeah, that. I mean, that's definitely an episode. The episode's called Darmok, and it's one that I'm sure a lot of people have talked about, but we've talked about. So that kind of originated as a concept song, right? But the premise is that they're trying to communicate with an alien race, but it's the universal translator basically won't work because the race they eventually figure out speaks only in metaphor and refers to historical events in their history, basically, for meaning, you know, and it's hard for them to figure that out. And Picard eventually figures it out. But I think, like, vibe-wise, that's definitely a Talking Heads jam. I've always been really interested in songs that are kind of trance-like in a way. I have two poles of my musical interests, in a sense. I like stuff with a lot of changes, you know, jazz, Steely Dan, stuff like that. And I like stuff that almost doesn't change at all. I kind of feel like I got away with penning a song that really doesn't have any chord changes in it, which is kind of exciting for me. Hopefully still has some drama, you know?
Right.
And then it just became a process of constructing it from the you know, made up language from that particular episode, Temerian, which was fun on its own. Dama angel out on the ocean. Sky gray, an army with fists open, a buyer of the crossroads, under two moons, an army with fists closed. Shotgun, when the walls fell. Shotgun, when the walls fell. Shotgun, when the walls fell. Shotgun, when the walls fell.
Damn, I miss being in a band, man. I miss it. One more song here to touch on with you guys. It's got to be my favorite. And I, you know, harking back to being a huge Pumpkins fan, I guess this is where when you guys said you were, you know, Pink Floyd inspired you, we were like, well, no shit. Because Four Lights, I think, has, you know, a Floyd kind of like an airy, like, what's the word I'm looking for with the Pumpkins in the 90s? Kind of like that airy dreamscape kind of a rock thing happening on top of it. And, damn, it's just so good to listen to. I can't tell you how many times I've listened to that song. Bravo, guys. So can you tell us about that song?
Yeah, definitely. I'm really happy with that song, too. And I think in a way that the recording of that song and how well we all felt it came out, and it kind of represented us just live playing as a band, which is what that take was, made us want to continue the band, you know, beyond those sessions, which was really cool.
Yeah.
But and I was using the Rat Proco guitar pedal, which I'm pretty confident James Iha had in his rig.
Oh, shit, son. Speaking my language.
But, you know, like, writing-wise, it came from this idea that one of the things I think is the trippiest on Next Gen or in the Star Trek world is, like, all the weird stuff that happens to them, basically. So it's about Picard's kind of journey through several episodes of some of the stranger time jump kind of situations that he's been in, whether it was sorry, the whole shell of the thing is him getting tortured by the Cardassians. That's the Four Lights reference from Chains of Command. And while he's getting, you know, while he's kind of under the knife there, he's sort of zoning out and dreaming all this other stuff that's happened to him. And so it was a chance to just reference these other episodes from the series that I always thought were really strange, like the one where the Inner Light, where he goes and lives that whole other life, even though he's unconscious on the Enterprise for an hour, but he lives 50 years on some planet and has grandkids and learns to play the flute. And, you know, that he comes to in the Enterprise, and they're just like, all right, well, back to work tomorrow, right? You know, it's like back to the job. Stuff like that. So, you know, I think it was a cool opportunity to just, like, reference some of the stranger events. I touch on, in the lyrics, touch on, like, Tapestry, which is the one where Q sends Picard back. He gets stabbed in the heart by the aforementioned Norskins and has a chance to rewrite history or not. You know, stuff like that. But ultimately, yeah, we wanted to write a trippy song, and I thought those were some of the trippier experiences happening in the next-gen world, is when they kind of get thrown for a loop or thrown into some weird repeating situation. And they seem to just roll with it, which I've always been impressed by. Dreams I live.
Absolutely love it. I mean, it chills you out. It almost makes me want to roll a joint. It really does. Like, I adore it. And it's just a great album from front to back. Again, I can't recommend to everyone enough. Check out the Beverly Crushers. And if you'd like to get a free copy of the album, just go to our Instagram and give us a follow if you're not already following us, and DM us saying, hey, I want the Sick Bay album. We've got three codes to download the album for free, and the first three people who come for them get them. So yeah, again, follow us on Instagram if you don't already, and then just send us a DM saying, hey, I want the Sick Bay album, and if you're one of the first three, we'll shoot you that code. There's also an EP up there, Engage, and I know that you gentlemen are on Instagram. Is it at The Beverly Crushers, or is it just at Beverly Crushers?
Jeez, what is it, Tom?
I can't remember now.
I don't have Instagram, dude. I don't do anything.
Hang on. My phone is handy. I'll pull it up here. I just had you.
Wait. Jeremy, I'd be remiss if I did not tell you about the greatest Easter egg we feel like we buried on this, which is in the Four Lights recording. So for any true Trek, but not that you asked, but I feel I must share.
Oh, I got to know. I love the song. I've got to know everything about it.
Well, if you recall, the premise of when Picard is being tortured, the Four Lights line, the premise is that, like in 1984, the torturer is trying to get Picard to admit that there's a different number than what are really there. Picard is not going to break. He's not going to give it up, right? So at the very end of the song, we come back for the There Are Four Lights part. And sorry, the Cardassian is trying to get him to say there's five lights. So at the very end of the song, we put a five-part harmony in there.
Yes, I love that.
We worked on that one for a long time. Like, how can we fit a fifth part in here? We should absolutely have to have a fifth part. There's no way we can have four parts.
Yeah, I love that. I would have never put that together, obviously. But I love that part of the song. I mean, and talking about a place where you guys get to exercise that ability to harmonize, is that the two of you doing all those layers there?
No, that was all five guys at the session. So that was myself, Tom, Scott, Joe the drummer, and Igor, who was with us on that first session as a guitar player and sometimes vocalist. I think it's all five of us.
That is incredible. I just want to go listen now. As soon as we're off of here, I'm going to be turning it over.
On the way home again. Yeah.
And I'm not kissing your ass. I absolutely mean that. Absolutely mean that. And I was actually trying to look up the Beverly Crushers, but then I got too hooked on that Easter egg. That was
the name, the Beverly Crushers. Did that have any kind of Big Bang Theory reference that helped that along?
No, honestly, okay. I had a dream where I was said that if I was a DJ, I was going to call myself Dr. Crusher. I thought that'd be a pretty good DJ name, but then I was like, oh, I'm never going to be a DJ. And then we decided we were calling ourselves Dr. Crusher would have been a little bit too, like, you know, metal-y. And so instead, we want to tone it down a little bit. So we came up with the Beverly Crushers and apparently now there's a band called Beverly Crusher as well. So we are the Beverly Crushers, but we wanted to, you know, give homage to definitely the best doctor on the show.
Yeah.
We certainly aren't going to call ourselves the Catherine Pulaski anytime soon.
I think Tom came up with the name, as he mentioned, but it resonated with me too, because I had a bigger crush on Crusher as a kid than I did on Troy. I know Troy was supposed to be the eye candy, but I like Crusher better. even then. So
they were both cute, but I mean, Troy was just easy because, I mean, you didn't have to really use your imagination, did you know?
Yeah,
it was all there in purple for you to take in. And I did double check. You guys are on Instagram at the Beverly Crushers. One thing I did forget to ask, have you guys ever gotten any attention from the cast, crew, producers, anybody from the show with the concept of your band?
We did manage to get Gates to retweet us a couple times. So that was nice. I don't know if she's actually listened to the material or not, but she gave it a half endorsement at least. So pretty cool.
Well, we'll be tagging her in this episode, that's for sure. As far, you know, aside from Instagram, I know you guys have a Bandcamp page. Is there anywhere else you guys, we should be directing people?
Yeah, the Bandcamp site is the main place where we have all the merch. We've made some other Star Trek related merch, and we'll continue publishing stuff there. We have a Facebook page that's, you know, usually meant to direct people over there, but we're doing stuff there. And, you know, we're compiling more songs now. Tom and I are still writing, and I think we got about half a record written, probably. We got to go in and arrange it and start recording it, but we're looking to keep releasing music. So
that's awesome. Exciting. I'm excited. Yep. Definitely excited. Well, gentlemen, I want to thank you both so much for taking time to be here. This has been an absolute fucking treat. And please just let us know when there are new projects coming down the pike. Please keep us in the loop. Please keep us in the loop, gentlemen. Thank you guys so much for being here. And Jack, what do we have on the website, sir?
Go to cannedairpodcast.com where you can see show highlights, guest info, listen to the show, follow us on all our social media, become a patron, buy some merch, see some of the YouTube videos on our YouTube page. And if you'd like to be a guest and promote your work, send us an email on our contacts page.
And don't forget to find us on Twitter at CannedAirPod and Instagram, Canned_Air. And that website Jack just mentioned, CannedAirPodcast.com, has links to our Patreon page and our merch page. So what more do you need? All in one nice little package. And I think that's going to do it for this week. People, check out this band, the Beverly Crushers, the album Sick Bay. We're going to have links for it up on our website and on this episode. So please check it out. You won't regret it. And until next time, I am Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jack Doherty.
I'm Rob Cassis.
And I'm Tom Monahan.
Thanks so much for listening, everyone. And always remember to be excellent to each other.
Puppy. Oh no!
Don't run, it'll only make things worse.
Mutt!
Remember, you never want to approach a stray dog, especially one that's foaming at the mouth. Get away from the animal as quickly as you can and tell a grown-up.
Hey.
And knowing is half the battle.
G.I. Joe!
This has been a Canned Air production.
Are you tired of seeing your teen or young adult struggle on a path that clearly isn't the right fit? Is your teenager confused about which direction to take after high school? The future of work is changing rapidly, and our kids need to know all of the options available after high school so they're empowered to make the choice that is best for them. In each episode, we explore the latest trends that are shaping the opportunities of today and tomorrow. I'm your host, Betsy Jewell, and this is the High School Hamster Wheel Podcast.